This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a critical section of his address yesterday to the United Nations Security Council, Secretary of State Colin Powell said there's a sinister link between Iraq and al-Qaeda.
Iraq today harbors a deadly terrorist network headed by Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, an associate and collaborator of Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda lieutenants. Zarqawi, a Palestinian born in Jordan, fought in the Afghan War more than a decade ago. Returning to Afghanistan in 2000, he oversaw a terrorist training camp. One of his specialties, and one of the specialties of this camp, is poisons. When our coalition ousted the Taliban, the Zarqawi network helped establish another poison and explosive training center camp, and this camp is located in northeastern Iraq.
The Secretary of State said this cell was responsible for the murder of an American diplomat, Lawrence Foley, in Amman, Jordan last year, and for terrorist operations in Europe. Establishing a connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden has been one of the thorniest parts of the administration's case against Iraq, and one of the most important. For many, it's the hinge between a threat that can be contained and a threat that demands urgent action. So, did Secretary Powell connect the dots between Iraq and al-Qaeda? Is hatred of the United States enough to forge an alliance between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein? And how important is that connection to you as you consider a possible war with Iraq? Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden. Always good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
And joining us from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston is Jessica Stern. She lectures on terrorism at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard and served on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Peter Bergen, before Secretary Powell's address yesterday, you wrote that the evidence linking Iraq and al-Qaeda is somewhere between tenuous and non-existent. Did you hear anything yesterday that changes your mind about that?
Well, this was the strongest presentation that the administration has made, clearly, and with an order of specificity much higher than previous assertions that there was this link. I was impressed. The case is still circumstantial. The case is... it's still not entirely. It's certainly. The secretary did not assert that Al Qaeda has operational control of this Zarqawi network. It's not really clear where Zarqawi is right now. There are a number of unanswered questions. Nonetheless, this connected a lot more dots than had been connected before.
I should say that a foreign ministry official in Baghdad, Saeed al-Musawi, told a news conference today, quote, "We do not know Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. We do not know his whereabouts, and we continue to cooperate with the Jordanian authorities to put an end to his activities in Iraq." Jessica Stern, your take on the case that Secretary Powell made yesterday?
Well, I agree with Peter that the evidence presented now is far more compelling rather than just assertions and a few claims about interrogation reports. We're actually hearing about intercepted telephone conversations, interrogation of Zarqawi's deputy, information about meetings that apparently have taken place. But whenever we make judgments about intelligence assessments, we're always influenced by our own value judgments and by instrumental judgments about what it is we're trying to achieve. And clearly, this administration wants to draw a particular conclusion.
Is it conceivable that if this man is active in Baghdad, that he is acting without the knowledge of the authorities there, Jessica?
Well, I suppose it's remotely possible. It seems unlikely. I don't think that his presence in Baghdad necessarily proves that he is working together with the Iraqi regime. However, even if it seems unlikely, they wouldn't know about him. After all, al-Qaeda, according to the Bush administration, is present all over the world, including in the United States. It's certainly not the case that al-Qaeda is actively working with the governments that it has... whose countries it has penetrated.
Tell us a little bit more about Abu Musab Zarqawi, Peter Bergen. Who is he, and what is the link, if there is one, to al-Qaeda?
Well, I mean, I was asking people in the U.S. government who who were actively involved in the Bin Laden investigation, what about this guy Zakawi? This is about 4 or 5 months ago. They were like, we don't really know much about him. So he has come to the fore rather recently. He's a Jordanian, I mean, if Secretary Powell is correct, he apparently has this network of people, and the secretary used the phrase 116 operatives who'd been arrested as part of this network all around Europe. And there have been a number of arrests in France and in Italy, Germany, in England recently, all of whom, and these arrests all seem to have one thing in common, an unhealthy interest in chemical weapons. And so if indeed this network is run by Zakawi, certainly European officials have said that he was an important member of the organization. But he's certainly not in the Division A of Al-Qaeda. I mean, that should be clear. You know, he's not on the FBI's 22 most wanted terrorist list, just as a for instance.
And Jessica Stern, tell us a little bit more. The allegations specifically in terms of this group's involvement were the murder of Mr. Foley in Amman last year, and as Peter Bergen was suggesting, the link to the so-called ricin operation in London, in which we should point out a British policeman was killed in the arrests in there.
Yes, that's right. You know, it's very clear that one thing that Al-Qaeda need a lot of help with is acquisition of weapons of mass destruction. And clearly they have been really trying to acquire a workable chemical and biological weapons capacity. And this is something that Iraq definitely could help them with. So I find the argument that they might join forces, even though they have very different styles and purported objectives, I find that argument fairly persuasive, and actually have found it persuasive for some time. It's just that the administration hadn't put forward evidence. Still, the evidence, it would be nice to have more evidence, but there is more today than there was a few months ago.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, totn@npr.org. Joining us now from Acton, Massachusetts, is Andrew.
Thank you. Bin Laden may hate Hussein. Hussein may hate Bin Laden. And even if these two were sworn never to work with each other and forsworn to each other's destruction, what would prevent Bin Laden, who has demonstrated an ability to put together an elaborate organization with impressive capabilities, people willing to die for their cause, what would prevent Bin Laden from stealing one of Hussein's chemical, nuclear, or biological weapons? I think this is a consideration that we should take because the outcome is the same even if they're working together, and I think it's a possibility that's being overlooked. And Peter, I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Andrew. Peter Bergen, did you want to respond?
It appears the UN inspectors are having a tough time finding these weapons, so stealing them may be rather more problematic than the caller suggests.
Yet you have also talked about the different ideological beds in which these two organizations inhabit.
Yeah. I mean, when we met with Osama bin Laden in 97 in eastern Afghanistan, he volunteered that Saddam is a bad Muslim. For Osama, that's as bad as it gets. So clearly they're ideologically different. Of course, Churchill and Stalin were hardly ideological soulmates, and they cooperated at a certain point in World War II. So, you know, going to what Jessica is saying, you know, it's possible they might cooperate. Now we have, but when we use the word evidence for what Powell was talking about, there was a different form of evidence than was presented on weapons of mass destruction. We didn't have telephone intercepts about this stuff. And obviously this stuff may be harder to intercept telephonically, but we are relying sort of on his say-so. But I think his case was immensely strengthened by things he didn't say. He didn't talk about a possible Iraqi link to 9/11. He didn't talk about a possible meeting between Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker, and the Czechs. There were a lot of things he didn't talk about. I think that immeasurably strengthened the things he did talk about.
Jessica Stern, as you say, we tend to look at this from our perspective. If Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein are in bed together, wouldn't that weaken Osama bin Laden's ideological and religious argument? Wouldn't he be seen as an opportunist?
Well, I think that his mission has really been changing over time. At first, he did seem to have a very concrete objective, which Peter Bergen has talked about quite a bit. That was something very easy to understand, to force U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia. But over time, his mission has really expanded. We've become aware that he has sort of mystical ideas, that he interprets dreams, that he would like to reestablish a caliphate. And moreover, he's talking more and more, or his operatives, people speaking on his behalf, have been talking more and more about fighting a new world order and seeing international institutions as the enemy, as in fact an instrument of the enemy, the West and America in particular. And so you could imagine these two entities joining forces to fight this enemy that uses the United Nations as its weapon. Certainly Saddam Hussein would be sympathetic to that point of view.
Let's go now to Roger, who's on the line with us from Baltimore.
Yes, hello. I had two comments. One was my concern that if the administration is so certain about the camp being used for terrorist activities and chemical weapons training, why it is that the administration hasn't already taken that camp out. I mean, if the war on terrorism is so serious and that we really need to do it, why are we even fooling around, and why hasn't it already been taken out? And secondly...
Well, why don't we do them one at a time, Roger?
Okay, sure.
Jessica Stern, the question has been asked not just by this listener, but other listeners, and William Sapphire today in the New York Times.
I think one would have to ask an administration official.
Well,
maybe Peter has an answer.
No, but I mean, it seems like a reasonable point.
For real.
Yeah, it's a serious question. The only explanation I've heard was that, in fact, up until a few months ago, the administration itself was dubious about this link and had only recently come to understand the full relationship. But doesn't that seem awfully convenient in terms of timing?
It does. They've been reporting that for a few days now.
Yeah.
Maybe the intelligence was good enough to present, but not good enough to target.
Roger, your other question?
My other one was about the assertion previously that, of course, a senior Iraqi intelligence official had met with Mohammed Atta, one of the hijackers. And obviously that then people backed off. The Vaclav Havel basically said that they couldn't confirm that, and other agencies basically backed off of it. And obviously that wasn't mentioned. But I think a lot of people in this country felt that there was a connection, certainly at that time, between al-Qaeda and Iraq, if not 9/11 in Iraq, based on those assertions that went on and on and were, and now, of course, that's completely disappeared. And it just makes you wonder if they make these accusations, they get a lot of credit with public opinion for a few days, and they get their numbers jacked up, and then it takes a while for these things to either be refuted or if the exaggerations to be brought back down. Yes, and I'm not saying they aren't in Iraq and there isn't a problem, but it just seems like their pattern is such that you can't really rely on the information as being compelling, as everybody loves to say.
Peter Bergen?
Well, I mean, I guess that's the point about Powell's presentation, is that he didn't go down the Iraq's involvement to 9/11 path. He didn't talk about Mohammed Atta because these things have been discredited and there's simply no link between Iraq and 9/11. And I think that helped, that bolstered his presentation.
Jessica Stern, he, as Peter pointed out, also did not mention the Atta connection and the meeting in Prague. Do you feel the same way about that?
Yes. On the other hand, I think the caller's skepticism is fully justified. This is not the first time we have seen an administration present intelligence findings in order to justify either in advance or after an attack. The Clinton administration also made some claims about an aspirin facility in Sudan that it attacked in August 1998 that it later had to walk back from. So The caller's skepticism is fully justified. We should be very skeptical.
The only difference is they bombed that facility. We're talking about a full-scale invasion of Iraq, and that's what
correct.
Really concerns me is, you know, let's really be sure and not just make assertions and that later get refuted and, you know, we're not really sure.
Roger, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. We're talking about Colin Powell's statements yesterday about connections between al-Qaeda and Iraq. Coming up next, more about the group at the center of those charges and the region of Iraq in which they operate, and we'll take more of your calls. 800-989-8255. Our email address, totn@npr.org. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about U.S. charges that Iraq harbors terrorist group connected with Osama bin Laden. Did Secretary of State Colin Powell provide enough evidence to make the connection yesterday? How much does it matter to you in making the case for war against Iraq? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can send email to us at totn@npr.org. Our guests are Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden, and Jessica Stern, a terrorism expert at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. And let's get back to the callers. Our next question comes from Matt, who's with us from Brea, California.
Yes, in regards to the potential connections between Iraq and al-Qaeda that were laid out by Secretary Powell yesterday, it's pretty generally accepted and widely known in the intelligence communities that the connections between Saudi Arabia and al-Qaeda are very, very strong, not only financially, but psychologically, and that 15 of the 19th hijackers of September 11th were Saudis. Why aren't we going after Saudi Arabia? The connections there seem to be much, much stronger than they are with Iraq.
Peter Bergen, you've made this very point.
Yeah, well, I mean, the real story about Saudi Arabia, I've talked to people involved in the investigation, is that the Saudis remain, quote, obstructionist about the inquiries into 9/11. They use words like despicable and useless to describe the Saudis' attitude to the inquiry. The Saudis have made an effort in the area of clamping down on charities which might support terrorism, but I think they realized they had a serious public relations problem. And just generally, I think Prince Nayef, the interior minister, just in the last month said that 9/11 was a Zionist conspiracy. So with allies like these.
Another important ally, of course, is Qatar, the sheikdom on the Persian Gulf coast, which is now host to two important American bases. Jessica Stern, a report in today's New York Times, suggested that a member of that royal family also has contacts with terrorism.
Yes, one of the problems that the U.S. government has is that individuals, members of, in this case, a member of the royal family in Qatar, are assisting al-Qaeda in the belief that they are supporting charitable work, in some cases knowing full well that they are actually supporting al-Qaeda, and in some cases believing that they're helping the families of the martyrs somewhere. It's really a difficult problem throughout the Gulf, actually.
And it seems like, as I think the caller is suggesting, there are times when the administration chooses to focus on some facts and overlook others.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And whenever we look at facts, we also, what are purported facts, we need to ask ourselves, are there competing hypotheses that would lead to the same presentation of evidence? And it's not clear that these kind of questions are being asked right now because of the zeal and the determination to go to war.
Matt, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Okay, appreciate it. Joining us now from Amman, Jordan, is Scott Peterson. He's been covering Iraq and the Middle East since the Gulf War and was in Kurdistan most recently last November. Scott Peterson, good to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
Remind us about Kurdistan. This is an area outside of Baghdad's control, in fact, hostile to Saddam Hussein.
Well, that's right. I mean, the northern chunk of Iraq, in fact, is outside Saddam Hussein's control, and the Kurds there have a degree of self-autonomy they've had for more than a decade. They've really turned the place around in the aftermath of the Gulf War. You remember that there were more than 1 million Kurdish refugees who fled rather than kind of come back under the control of Saddam Hussein, and they've turned that around to quite an intriguing mini-state up there. But on the very northeast fringe of it, it's actually not even controlled by the main Kurdish groups, but it's controlled by this Ansar al-Islam, this quite small Islamist group, which, of course, Secretary Powell was referring to yesterday.
And is there any evidence, or well, we heard some yesterday from Secretary Powell, his charges, that Mr. Zarqawi, the al-Qaeda representative, he says, is operating there as well. Any evidence to support that? Do you know?
Well, he could be in that area. This area is very, very small. It's just a sliver of territory. And I think that when your caller mentioned earlier, raised the question, why is it that the United States hasn't actually dealt with this? I think that that is a good question. There were several months ago some reports that were leaked saying that the Pentagon had in fact been ready to deal with this. But two things are to be kept in mind. One is that this territory, as small as it is right abutting the border with Iran, which of course complicates the possibility of any kind of American bombing there. You would basically have to have the Iranians nod their approval, or they would be taking it personally. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The second thing to keep in mind, I was very surprised to see the satellite photograph of the facility at Hormel that Secretary Powell showed yesterday at the Security Council, because in November, when I was up on the front, the Kurdish front line, looking down on this area, it's very stony, and it's also very small. You get a sense from up there about how really tiny this area is. And a facility like the one that he showed would have been one of the most kind of advanced facilities anywhere in northern Iraq, practically outside of the main cities. And it really didn't look like that kind of facility could fit in this narrow strip where these Islamists were staying. So also, I think if it had presented such an obvious target, that it would have been a lot easier for Washington to deal with before.
In an interview with ABC News, one of the leaders of Ansar al-Islam, Majmuddin Faraj Ahmad, denied the allegations that he's in any way linked to Iraq. He said his group opposes Saddam Hussein because he is not a good Muslim. Iraq has also denied any connection with this group, which they point out quite correctly is in an area outside of their control. Is the logic of these, again, as Peter Bergen suggested earlier, not a good Muslim, there are a lot of people who feel that way about Saddam Hussein and would be very reluctant to work with him.
Well, there do seem to be some connections with the regime. I have spoken to a Mukhabarat detainee who's held in northern Iraq, who swears up and down that one of the main Ansar al-Islam leaders is in fact in the pay of Saddam Hussein's intelligence services, and that in fact his mission when he was sent to northern Iraq before he was captured by the Kurds was in fact to try and track down this leader whose name is Abu Wael. Now, these are the kind of stories that I would expect form in many respects the basis of the case that Colin Powell put forward yesterday. And as Peter mentioned, we didn't hear any kind of intercepted telephone calls. It really wasn't much, except the secretary say so. And one of the potential weaknesses is that these kind of stories, as credible as these sources may appear, they really are impossible to corroborate. And my perspective of this allegation that basically one of the Ansar leaders is in the pay of Baghdad, to me, as just knowing what I know about Iraq and this region, I mean, that would really simply be prudent local politics.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Baghdad was concerned.
I was going to ask Jessica Stern. First of all, the Mukhabarat, which you mentioned, is Saddam Hussein's secret police. But also, Jessica Stern, wouldn't you be surprised if, in fact, there were not officials in both Kurdish parties that are running that place up there that are also in the pay of Saddam Hussein?
Oh, I would imagine that Saddam Hussein is trying to acquire whomever he can. Disinformation in generally, I think, is something that we always need to be very concerned about. And is it possible that there some party would like us to draw this conclusion for its own reason? Perhaps in the pay of someone else. I mean, this is the problem with intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott Peterson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Scott Peterson on the phone with us from Amman, Jordan. He's a correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. And let's get back to our callers. And Jeff joins us now in West Bloomfield, Michigan.
Good afternoon. I think Colin Powell did a pretty good job with the information that's been given to him. He can only express what he understands to be the truth of which has been brought to his attention. He's not out there on the front line and gathering this information himself. So I believe with the information that he has, as we sign many contracts, to the best of our knowledge, he has given the American people what he believes to be true. Now, I have no reason to not believe Colin Powell or any of our heads of state. I guess we've been had the wool pulled over our eyes in the past, I suppose. But I just think of the past histories of the individual we're dealing with, and there's no reason at this point where we should feel that Saddam Hussein is telling the truth and Colin Powell, is telling a lie.
Peter Bergen, a case that many people mentioned yesterday. Who do you believe?
Well, Colin Powell, of course, is more credible than Saddam Hussein or his ambassadors. I mean, that goes without saying. But one general point we can make about this is generally, by making a link between al-Qaeda and Iraq, is the administration, to some degree, taking away, muddying the waters. After all, the case on the weapons of mass destruction seems to be basically an open and shut case. I mean, clearly Iraq is hiding something. Clearly they're in material breach. My worry is that by trying to put Iraq and al-Qaeda embedded with each other, which I think is a case far from being proven, that the administration may detract from its, after all, rather clear-cut case on the weapons of mass destruction.
Jessica?
Well, I think Peter's right, but if the case is only based on the weapons of mass destruction, then I think we have to look at what we actually achieved the last time we went to war with Iraq. And when we look at the Gulf War Air Power Survey, it's very clear that we didn't get rid of much of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction capability with bombing raids. It was afterwards when we were able to go in, the inspectors were able to go in, and there were defectors who were telling us critically important information, for example, about the biological weapons program, that progress began. The war itself did very little, and now we're hearing about these very, very sophisticated biological weapons factories that are on wheels. You know, one of the key questions, I think, is what will we be able to accomplish, especially in regard to biological weapons production, given that the most important technology is actually that which is in people's heads as opposed to large factories.
Jeff, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. One real quick question. I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay.
In regards to the rocket test systems that they had there, there's the one question I do have in my mind. If we do have photographs of that, vectors do go directly to that place and see exactly what we saw by satellite.
Yeah,
I'll take that off the air.
Yeah, there was a hiccup there in Jeff's phone call. I think he said that he would hope that inspectors would go there. And Jessica Stern, so far as I understand, inspectors have gone to that site.
I'm afraid I didn't quite follow, but I hope that you...
This was the picture of the rocket test facility, the engine testing facility, in which he pointed out, Secretary Powell, yesterday, that there was a small one designed for missiles that would fit within the parameters of 150-kilometer range, and then a much bigger test stand next to it, presumably for rockets that could exceed the range. He said that after this satellite photograph had been taken, a roof had been put over that, so that satellites couldn't take pictures of what was happening underneath it.
Well, it certainly sounds completely consistent with Saddam Hussein's modus operandi, which is continually hiding, deceiving, this sort of onion approach that to get to the heart we have to keep peeling away the onion, that there's a constant deception. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Okay. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now let's go to Hugh, who is on the line with us from San Francisco.
Hi. Great program. I have two questions for you. First, regarding Kurdistan, I was glad to hear, and I was going to ask about that. I'll skip over it a little bit more quickly. You could almost do a whole program because of many of the implications with Kurdistan. But I would not be surprised, not because of specific, you know, Saddam Hussein bankrolling any al-Qaeda allies there, but just because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, that there wouldn't be some indirect connection with some of the al-Qaeda allies in that area. Secondly, I would like to know if the weakest part of Colin Powell's speech the other day was the linkage to al-Qaeda. What else is the administration doing about al-Qaeda, and can it focus on more than one issue at a time, because they're not talking about that. They're not talking about Kurdistan, and that wasn't the point of his speech. Mm-hmm. But what can they do more than walk and chew gum at the same time?
Is this a distraction from the war on terrorism, Peter Bergen?
I mean, it could be. I mean, clearly the administration is, to put it mildly, preoccupied with Iraq. I mean, there was a significant person missing from President Bush's State of the Union, and that was the name Osama bin Laden, who, after all, is alive, and so is his number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri. So is the head of the military network, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. These people don't take vacations or weekends, and they're planning to do more anti-American attacks. And I think a war against Iraq will be the occasion for a number of low-level anti-Western attacks, and possibly a large one from al-Qaeda itself.
Jessica Stern, you've been inside government as it makes these kinds of decisions. Is there still people focusing on Osama bin Laden, al-Qaeda? Are they continuing to pursue this with as much vigor as they should?
I have no doubt there are people who are focusing virtually every waking minute on al-Qaeda's activities and potential activities all over the globe. Whether high-level officials are devoting as much attention as we would like to this issue, unclear. They are clearly persuaded about the links between Iraq and al-Qaeda in a way that we're not the beneficiaries of the intelligence that they have, and perhaps they'll reveal more. But I think the caller should be reassured that there are people in the government who are focusing, working night and day to try to prevent such attacks, which I'm afraid will occur if we go to war with Iraq.
Well, it would be nice to hear more about it from the administration, and also more about what they're doing about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Hugh. Just very briefly, Peter, we just have about a minute or so left. Given what you just said, and I think everybody's got that in the back of their minds, the fears that this could be the cause of more terrorist attacks, yet at the same time, does al-Qaeda need an excuse to attack the United States? An attack on Iraq?
If al-Qaeda can't pull off something reasonably big, time to a war in Iraq, then there's a serious problem with their capabilities. They want to do something that is time to the war in Iraq.
Thank you very much. Peter Bergen was here with us in Studio 3A. He's the author of Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden. Thanks, as always. And Jessica Stern, a terrorism expert at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, the author of The Ultimate Terrorists. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we apologize to our listeners for the technical problems we had on the switch from our studios at WBUR in Boston. Problem on our end. We apologize.